Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the post-result Q3 FY25 earnings conference call of JSW Energy Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Vishal Periwal from Antique Stock Broking. Thank you, and over to you, Mr. Periwal.
Yeah, thanks, Sagar. Good evening, all. First of all, apologies for the slight delay to start the call. On behalf of Antique Stock Broking, I welcome you all to the post-result earnings call of JSW Energy Limited. And from the company side, we have a leadership team led by Mr. Sharad Mahendra, Joint MD, Mr. Pritesh Vinay, Director of Finance and CFO, and Mr. Bikash Chaudhary, who is Head Investor Relations and Strategic Finance. So, as usual, we'll have brief from the management on the quarter, one by quarter, and then we'll have lines open for Q&A. Yeah, Sharad sir, over to you.
Yeah, thank you, Vishal. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us today. It is my pleasure to share with you all the developments and updates for the quarter gone by. The sector dynamics are evolving towards energy security, as we have been seeing, meeting rising baseload and peaking load demand. And the adoption of low-cost energy storage solutions to integrate intermittent renewable power. This provides a blend of opportunities for developers like us having a presence across all modes of generation and storage and will continue to provide affordable solutions and sustainable power. Regarding the economy, we know that RBI has estimated GDP growth of 6.6% in the current fiscal and a projection of 6.9% in quarter one of FY26, which is primarily driven by robust economic activity and expectation of higher government expenditure in coming quarters. Before I delve into our quarterly performance, I would like to provide an overview of the current power sector landscape. The power demand for the country grew at 4.5% in the first 9 months of the current fiscal. In the third quarter, we have seen a demand growth moderating at 2.7%, but we have to recall that this is on a higher base of 9.9% growth witnessed during the same quarter last year. However, structurally, we continue to expect strong power demand in the medium term. The peak demand witnessed in this quarter is 224 gigawatt in December 24, versus last year during the same quarter, the peak demand was 220 gigawatt. Overall, for FY24, previous year, we have seen a peak demand reaching 250 gigawatt as compared to 243 gigawatt in the current fiscal. In line with power demand growth, the country's generation increased by 5.3% to date in FY25 and 3.7% in quarter 3. All India thermal PLF stood at 66.7% in the quarter as compared to 66.9% in the corresponding quarter last year. The share of intermittent renewables in the total generation stands at 12.4% during the quarter. Talking about the generation capacity, the total installed capacity in the country has reached 462 gigawatts. And the country has added 20 gigawatts so far in the current fiscal. The total renewable capacity additions in 9 months in FY25 stand at 19 gigawatts, dominated by 16 gigawatts of solar installations. Coming to the quarter, the net capacity addition stands at 9.3 gigawatts, which compares with the 2.9 gigawatts added last year in the same quarter. Capacity addition in the quarter was driven by a renewable capacity addition of 7.9 gigawatts, which was dominated by solar capacity addition of 7.1 gigawatts, while wind capacity addition was 800 megawatts during the quarter. Moving on to the bidding activity, as the current fiscal, the total utility scale auction of approximately 38 gigawatt capacity were bidded, which is continuing the pace which we have witnessed last year. And for quarter 3, total auction that took place was 16 gigawatt. 9 months was 38, and quarter three has seen 16 gigawatt with a notable dominance of customized solutions of hybrid and FDRE projects. Coming to the coal, as we speak, API4 coal prices are currently ruling at $100 per ton as compared to an average price of $110 per ton in quarter three of FY25 and 116 in quarter three of FY24. With the domestic market, sufficient steps are taken to keep a robust domestic coal supply. We have seen a low e-auction premium for domestic coal procurement, especially in Odisha and Chhattisgarh. Coming to the merchant market, we have seen a strong volume growth. The quarter gone by witnessed approximately a 16% increase in total cleared volumes at power exchange, while day-ahead volumes increased 14% year-on-year. The higher volumes due to higher firm power availability and better hydro generation have led to moderation in prices. The day-ahead market prices have decreased 26% year-on-year to ₹3.71 per unit as compared to ₹5 per unit in quarter three of last year. The higher volumes across the exchanges led to lower realization in the merchant market, which impacted the dark spreads of our short-term sales. However, our short-term realization continues to be at a premium to the average exchange prices. Having said that, we remain confident in the strong power demand in the medium term. Regarding the acquisition, on 27th of December, we announced the acquisition of O2 Power, a leading renewable energy platform with a capacity of 4,696 megawatt. This acquisition, valued at 12,468 crores, marks a significant milestone for JSW Energy. O2 Power's assets are spread across seven resource-rich states, with 2.3 gigawatt of the capacity to be operational by June 25, and an additional 2.4 gigawatt at various stages of development. This transaction will enhance our renewable energy portfolio and our footprint in this space. As guided earlier, the additional capex of 2.4 gigawatt of under construction and pipeline projects is expected to be between 13,000 to 14,000 crores. And along with this, this platform also comes with a total connectivity, which we see all know are aware is a challenge right now in the country, of 900 megawatt of transmission capacity already in place over and above 4.7 gigawatt, and an additional more than 800 megawatt of connectivity is at various stages of approval. So this gives us a very good space in accelerating our capacity addition going forward. O2 Power assets are of high quality, having a blended tariff of ₹3.37, with the majority of utility scale projects tied up with high quality off-takers like SECI, SJVN and NTPC. Just to give a view of this total 4.7 gigawatts at a blended tariff of ₹3.37, the solar component out of this total capacity is 64% and wind capacity is 36% of the total 4.6 gigawatts. And this blended tariff, this capacity gives us ₹3.37. On 10th January, we have also completed the acquisition of 125 megawatt wind project from HetroLab and HetroTrans Limited at an enterprise valuation of approximately ₹630 crores. This portfolio has a blended tariff of ₹5.22 per unit and an average remaining plant life of 15 years. Accounting for this, our installed capacity as of today stands at 8,242 megawatt. As we are aware, in another strategic move, we had bid for KSK Mahanadi Power Company under IBC proceedings, and we have now received a letter of intent for a 3,600 megawatt thermal power plant in Chhattisgarh, near to the coal belt. As the transaction gets completed, this asset along with O2 Power will start generating cash flows from day one. KSK Power is one of the largest thermal power plants changing hands under the IBC process. The plant's strategic location, fuel supply agreement, and efficient operations will ensure a reliable power supply, further solidifying our leadership in the energy sector. Currently, 95% of the operational capacity of 1,800 megawatts of KSK Power is tied up with the states of Uttar Pradesh and Tenjinko, Tamil Nadu, in long and medium-term PPA. Now, talking about our progress towards 10 gigawatts by FY25, we have fully revised the JSW Energy Utkal Limited, as we are talking, formerly known as Indbharat Thermal Power Plant, by synchronizing the second unit of 350 megawatts on 15th of January. We are on track to reach 10 gigawatts of capacity by end of FY25. In the quarter gone by, we have added 377 megawatts of capacity to our organic renewable project, which is entirely wind and represents 47% of the country's wind capacity addition of 800 megawatts in the third quarter. We are currently constructing 1.1 gigawatt of wind projects for SECI and group captives, and our Kutehar hydro plant of 240 megawatt capacity is progressing well for commissioning in current fiscal FY25 only. Now, to give the update on projects beyond 10 gigawatts to reach 20 gigawatts, as we have announced earlier, before FY30, our total under construction capacity stands at 7.8 gigawatts, which is beyond 10 gigawatts I am talking, with signed PPAs, and we have 3.9 gigawatts of capacity where we are expecting PPAs to be signed soon. In addition, we have 8.3 gigawatt of capacity of transactions under acquisition, of which bolt-on capacity is approximately 4 gigawatt. With all of the above, our long-term generation capacity is now 28.3 gigawatt. On our energy storage projects, our SECI battery energy storage project of 1 gigawatt hour, where CERC has not allowed the tariff adoption, is currently on hold. To provide some background, the project bidding was conducted transparently and in accordance with the bidding guidelines of Ministry of Power on 25th August 2022, where JSW emerged as L1 bidder in the e-reverse auction. There were a total of 8 developers and we were issued a letter of award in January 23. The fixed capacity charge discovered was 10.8 lakh per megawatt per month, which includes the VGF, the viability gap funding, which was being provided for this project by the government. The project, being the first of its kind, was on boot basis after 12 years, with a residual battery capacity of not less than 75% of the project capacity. The developer, that is JSW Energy, had no guaranteed off-taker for 40%. As per the arrangement, SECI was to execute a battery energy storage purchase agreement with the BESS developer identified through bidding and a battery energy storage sale agreement with the end procurer on back-to-back basis. In March 24, the company signed a battery energy storage purchase agreement for the first project of 500 megawatt hours, 250 into 2, out of the allotted 500 megawatt or 1000 megawatt hour. However, on 2nd January 2025, current year, CERC in its order has not allowed tariff adoption. Observing that the proposed tariff is not aligned with the prevailing market prices due to delay by SECI in signing the battery energy storage purchase agreement and the battery energy storage sale agreement, we have appealed against the order in April. And we are confident that this will be looked, because there stands a lot of precedence in this area of such tariff adoptions, the tariffs being adopted earlier. So we have appealed and we are waiting for the outcome. In storage, our PSP project that we won in October 24, where we were constructing 12 gigawatt hour of pumped storage plant at Bhowali in the state of Maharashtra, which is tied up with MSEDCL. We have signed the PPA. We are 48 months starting in October 24 to complete the project. The energy storage facility agreement is for the supply of energy storage capacity for a period of 40 years, where the company will be entitled to receive a fixed capacity charge of 84.66 lakhs per megawatt per year. Coming to the operational performance of the quarter, for the quarter, our net generation for the quarter rose by 10% year on year to 6.8 billion units. Driven by an 18% year on year increase in renewable generation, this was driven by RE capacity additions and higher thermal generation. Total net generation from the tied up portfolio was up by 7% year on year in the quarter, while short term generation including hydro increased strongly by 28% year on year. Coming to our thermal, the net generation increased 8% year on year, driven by the contribution of 571 million units from JSW Energy Utkal Unit 1. Our long-term thermal generation was up 4% year on year, while our short-term generation increased 23% year on year. The average PLF of our thermal assets stands at 72% as compared to the country's average thermal PLF of 66.7%. Our renewable generation increase of 18% year on year was particularly driven by the addition of 928 megawatts of wind capacity in last 12 months and a robust 14% year on year increase in hydro generation due to better hydrology. Thank you, friends. With this now, I will pass on to Mr. Pritesh Vinay, CFO and Director of Finance, to talk on the financial performance for the quarter. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sharad. Very good evening to all the participants who have joined us for the third quarter and 9 months results conference call. Picking up a thread from what Sharad said, while the overall generation was up by 10% YOY, the total revenue was largely flattish, and the primary reason for this was that, the incremental sales from the new RE capacity addition and the Utkal Unit 1 were offset by both lower short-term realizations at the Ratnagiri and Vijayanagar plant, as well as a lower tariff at hydro plant because of the change in depreciation policy as per the CERC tariff regulation. The EBITDA for the quarter stood at 1,115 crores, which was down by 9% YOY. What has also happened during the quarter is this, that we have commissioned about 377 megawatts of incremental wind capacity. And, this capacity has come in basically post the peak season of the monsoon period.
So you're sounding a bit distant right now.
Yeah, is this better?
Much better, sir. Please go ahead.
Yeah. I was saying that, we have commissioned 377 megawatt of wind capacity during the quarter, which has come in post the peak generation season. Typically, it has come in the lean season, and that too was not available for the entire 90 days of the quarter. So there's been additional capitalization due to new capacities commissioned, which has led to the finance cost and the depreciation going up. As a result, the profit before tax was down. And the reported profit after tax for the quarter is stood at 168 crores, which is down by 27%. If you look at the 9 month performance, the revenue was largely flattish, but the EBITDA also marginally grew, largely flattish at about 4,600 crores. And the profit after tax for the 9 month period stood at 1,543 crores, which is up by about 12%. Talking about the balance sheet, as the company continues to grow and invest additional amounts towards CAPEX, the net debt at the end of December stood at about 26,500 crores, with a cash and cash equivalents just shy of 5,000 crores. This is a sequential increase in net debt by about 1,575 crores. The leverage ratio continues to be healthy. We reported a net debt to TTM EBITDA of 4.5 turns. Because of the additional capitalization, what has happened is that, The debt on the operating companies is now gone up by about 3,000 crore. So excluding the capital work in progress, which was about 10,200 crore of net debt due to capital work in progress, the net debt on the operating companies stood at 16,250 crore, and this translated to a net debt to EBITDA of 2.8 times. The weighted average interest cost inched up marginally due to the annual resets of some of these facilities and the increase in the MCLR by some of the lending institutions, but still stayed well below 8.9% at the end of the quarter. From a receivables profile, again, pretty much in control. We reported total receivables of 2,500 crore at the end of December. The day sales outstanding, including the amount not due, stood at about 96 days. A large part of the overdue at the end of December has been received in the month of January. That is the broad from a financial metrics point of view. I think I'll stop there, and operator, we can open the floor for Q&A, please.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone phone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Again, you may press star and one to join the question queue. Our first question comes from Mohit Kumar from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Thank you, sir. Thank you for the opportunity. My first question is, how do you think about the leverage given the two large acquisitions and a very large pipeline of under construction assets?
So, Mohit, good question. I'll repeat what we have consistently been maintaining for the last couple of years since we embarked on this growth journey, that the strategic priority is to protect the credit ratings, and whatever growth opportunities we want to pursue, we would ensure that we are well within the guardrails from a credit metrics point of view to protect the credit ratings. Especially since you asked that in the question, I would like to reiterate and bring to everybody's attention that after what you're calling as two very large acquisitions, which I completely agree with, even after that, if you look at the flash put out by the credit rating agencies at the end of December, the rating agencies are comfortable maintaining our AA with a stable outlook after digesting in these two large acquisitions. Because what is probably getting underappreciated is that these two large acquisitions are also coming with large EBITDA. It is not just adding to the leverage, but it is also adding to the EBITDA. So from an overall ratio point of view, we would be comfortable. Of course, you've also rightly mentioned about the organic growth pipeline as well. And hence, if you recall, about a year ago, same time, we were talking about, acceleration of the growth because of, a very conducive returns environment. And hence, in order to prepare ourselves better, we had gone ahead and raised a capital raise, an equity capital raise at the start of the fiscal year. It was precisely with this intention, to build a war chest and ensure that the balance sheet is healthy to protect the growth. So I would just want to reiterate that yes, large acquisitions, but coming with strong EBITDA generation and cash flow generation profile, and we will, strategic priority is to protect the ratings.
Understood. My second question is on the KSK Mahanadi. What is the plan here? Is there a plan to expand capacity by one unit or more than one unit in the medium term? And what is the status of NCLT for the other NCLT? I think some of the NCLTs are under NCLT, like water and rail. Can you please help us with that?
See, this process is already on. As you rightly said, the other two SPVs also are in NCLT. Process is at an advanced stage. So all those things have been accounted when we have gone for this. Regarding KSK Power, we will like to say that this is already at NCLT and the hearings are likely to take place soon. And we expect a faster earlier decision on this. Regarding the capacities, the balance capacities, what you're talking, we'll just like to highlight that the operational capacity, which is 50% of the total, which is 1.8 gigawatts, is fully operational tied up. Balance capacity, we have to recall that I have earlier also said that most of the balance of plant is complete, whether it is power evacuation, whether it is water pipeline for running the plant, everything is ready for entire 3.6 gigawatt plant capacity. And also for the balance 1.8 gigawatt expansion, significant part in one of the units has already been done and other two also part work has been done. So we are quite confident, the one positive which is there is that the balance capacity increase to take it to entire 3.6 gigawatt operational, it will be significantly lower than the benchmark cost of setting up a new greenfield capacity. So that is there and that we will be planning as and when the process, IBC process gets completed.
Understood. Thank you and all the best. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Rajesh Majumdar from B&K Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening, sir, and thanks for the opportunity. Sir, my question was, first question was on a recent CERC order, which actually does not pay for the informed power. This is dated Jan 23rd, and this actually does not pay for the informed power between the time of commissioning of a plant and the commercial generation. Since Ind-Barath 2 has just been commissioned, as well as we have so much of thermal capacity additions coming in KSK Mahanadi, including capacity additions, what is the kind of impact that you envisage on this, and B, do you think it can change?
This new regulation which has come, it is not going to have any significant impact because we have to see that what it says, that there is a ramp up of the unit. And whenever we are working on the project, the entire process, in case of Ind-Barath, there has been a very good learning while ramping up to full capacity the first unit. And we are in a position to ramp this unit to full capacity and demonstrate for 72 hours. So it will not take any significantly long time and we are confident that we will be reaching this capacity at a much earlier timeline, keeping in mind the learnings from Unit 1. So it is not going to have any significant impact and whatever we capitalize in terms of before we do the COD, everything is well within the budgeted numbers what we have planned and budgeted for this commissioning and COD, up to COD. So this is well in control and we in the same process we will be followed whenever we go for the COD, commissioning and COD. So if it is a very large timeline to stabilize the unit and reach the full capacity to demonstrate, I don't see that any significant challenge in that. We have done the evaluation ourselves.
So what about the project in the NCLT case, Kemanade? Do you think that would be a problem in the new 1800 megawatt again? Because those will take much longer in terms of between the date of commissioning and the COD.
No, the balance 1.8 gigawatt what you are talking.
Yes, that's right.
No, Ramesh, see, the first priority is to get the asset in our fold, right? I would request not to put, the cart before the horse because, first we need to be in the saddle, own the asset, and then we'll have to assess, potential expansion optionalities, offtake optionalities, techno-economics, a whole host of work before we'll be in a position to, press the button on the expansion post acquisition, right? So I think it would be a bit premature to comment on that. Yeah?
No, appreciate it. Thank you, sir. My second question is, sir, on the O2 Power and KSK Mahanadi, could you give us some color of the EBITDA that we can generate at, say, 1800 megawatt of KSK and the full O2 Power capacity, say, FY27 or something, what can be the additional EBITDA from these two acquisitions?
No, Rajesh, I don't think at this stage because it is
under that maybe, yeah.
KSK historical number is available. Last financial year in fiscal 2024, they had done an EBITDA of 2,600 crores. So that, is in a way a public domain information.
Yeah.
So happy to share that because there's no breach of NDA, obligations on that one. O2, we have kind of, guided a steady state EBITDA, when we go to a 2.3 gigawatt operational capacity, which is expected, say, in the middle of this year, then on an annualized run rate basis, that portfolio will generate about 1,500 crore of EBITDA. There's a particular slide we had put in the deck that was uploaded at the time of the O2 acquisition. You'll get that, that at a 2.3 gigawatt, a steady state run rate is about 1,500 crore. When it goes to, the 4.7 gigawatt, the expected steady state EBITDA run rate is about 3,750 crores. So beyond that, we'll not be able to add anything else. Yeah?
Right. And one small bookkeeping question. What was the merchant tariff in Q3?
So merchant tariff, we do not share, but you'll be able to derive. Let me help you out to do that. In the total generation, in the appendixes, you will see a total and a long-term differentiation. The gap is a short-term volume. There is an EBITDA bridge where we are talking about the EBITDA impact due to that. What the coal price indices, how they have moved. So you'll be able to gross it up. Yeah.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Sumit Kishore from Axis Capital. Please go ahead.
Good evening. My first question is, of the 7.8 gigawatt over and above the 10 gigawatt target for FY25 end that you have PPAs for, how are you placed in terms of the transmission, evacuation and land, for these projects?
Yeah, Sumit, relevant point, because everyone is questioning about the connectivity and land which the industry is facing as challenge. But we acted upon, and majority of the capacity, the PPAs which we have signed, we are fully ready, whether it is land or connectivity. And to overcome the connectivity issue, the significant portion of this total 7.8 gigawatt is within the state, for the same state, through the STU connectivity, which is available in most of the states. So that was the step which we started acting about 9 months, year back. So that is the reason our readiness, and we are absolutely certain that the 7.8 gigawatt of the PPA signed, these projects will be completed within the time frame as per the PPA term. And connectivity and land will not be a challenge in these both in this case.
So most of these projects will not require CTU.
Majority. Wherever the CTU is, small capacities are there, where it is CTU, where it is available, but this 7.8 gigawatt is entirely logged in terms of connectivity and also the land. So there is no challenge in terms of land and connectivity for these 7.8 gigawatts of projects to be completed within the time frame as per the PPAs.
So, my second question is industry level. What are the emerging trends you are seeing in wind solar pricing for FDRE projects with the evolving battery economics? How is it changing the sizing for wind and solar in FDRE projects?
Yeah, I think again a very good question in terms of when we say FDRE, till now what we have seen in the last 6 months, a small change which we are seeing, it is more of better planning for the project to provide the right solution to the end buyer as per their requirements in FDRE, that we were seeing in majority of the cases earlier, which was happening for a hybrid wind solar, maybe combined with the storage at normally single location, which was restricting the solutions. Now, in fact, we also in the CNI space have signed wherein to optimize and taking out the best of the generation and the lowest cost of per unit of investment, that wind is in one state connected with CTU and solar is in a different state along with battery if required or if it's a hybrid, and providing the solution to the same customer. So this is one change which we have seen from co-located to diversified hybrid solutions, along with the storage is one we are seeing. Another thing which has been witnessed in last 6 to 8 months, if you have been monitoring the kind of bids which are coming, that with so much of solar capacity addition happening, whatever capacity addition, country has seen about 20 gigawatts in maybe first 9 months, 19 to 20 gigawatts, 16 gigawatts is solar. Now, the solution, despite a moderate growth of 4.5% during the evening peak hours or early morning peak hours, the demand supply situation is going to even be more challenging. The demand will keep on growing. So with this, the solution of solar plus battery energy storage projects are coming up now, which has a two-prong advantage. One is that solar during the daytime, charging the battery and releasing during the evening peak when there is a demand is more. And second is better utilization of the country's grid infrastructure, because solar project blocks the capacity for 24 hours and only uses for 8 hours. So this is a better utilization of country's assets, also which are their transmission assets, and a solution for the peaking. So these are certain changes which we are seeing. Of course, states are now working very seriously towards this solution of peak hour requirements, which after 5 years from now, the gap is going to be significant, even if there is a continuous 5 to 6% demand growth. For that, pump storage for a longer solution, storage solution, is again now taking due importance and preference, and the states are coming with their bids for pump storage also. So these are significant changes which we have noticed in last 6 months.
Sure. My final question your energy storage project, particularly on standalone BESS, the SECI 15 and group captive. So has there been any slowdown after the CERC order in your efforts to commission your SECI standalone project, because it has had a merchant component? And how are the others progressing in terms of, commissioning? And if you could give us some color on what kind of pricing you would have, for a CAPEX for the battery capacity that you would create.
See, one is there is no slowdown. Lot of bids are coming. People are participating. And battery energy storage for a short duration storage is the best solution right now, which is required fast. So this is one that there is no slowdown. Apart from that, we will as I have told in my opening remarks, that the decision has been challenged. So I don't think we have to remember that when anyone evaluates and compares that what was the price discovered during that time, during that project, which is now tariff adoption has been not done and challenged by us, and what the tariff discovery is there today. It apparently looks very high, but we have to see two significant difference in that project as compared to the current projects which are coming and which also have a good viability. That this was with a viability gap funding of more than maybe 40-45% in terms of the tariff discovered at which we have got. And apart from that, this is a boot model. After 12 years, the asset gets transferred in that case. Now the bids which are coming is not on the boot model most of the cases. So it is not a like-to-like comparison from what the today's project cost is, what is the cost variant discovery which is there. So this is what we would like to say in terms of the CapEx and all. These are all very dynamic numbers. The tariff between discovered are very dynamic. What is the design? What is the storage? What is the loading? So this is dynamic. So this is what I would like to mention for this what you just asked.
You had mentioned on the previous call that 1 gigawatt hour BESS will get commissioned by June 25. So just wanted to check whether that plan would be
because of this development, it may take maybe depending on how fast the decision comes, it may take maybe a few months here or there. That is all. We will be in a better position once this legal matter gets closed.
Because the capacity can be fungible across your other
absolutely. These are all containerized solutions. And it is not at all possible. We have enough of order book within the group captive and other locations to use the same asset. So that is not at all a challenge.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, a reminder to all the participants, you may press star and one to ask a question. The next question comes from the line of Nikhil Abhyankar from UTI Mutual Funds. Please go ahead.
Thank you, sir. So my first question is regarding the Mitra generation. Have you seen a dip in Q3? And was it related to machine availability or due to low?
See, there is a slight dip in Mitra generation, which is basically because of the wind speeds were slightly lower than what was expected, but that is very temporary and short term. We don't see any lasting impact of that. But machine availability wise, there was no challenge. The machine availability continues to remain at almost close to 98% to 99%. So machine availability is there. It is only the wind which is there. 97% to 98% availability remains there.
Okay. And so after we announced our O2 acquisition, I think they won a SECI bid for FDRE6 for 200 megawatt into 4 hours. And the tariff discount was almost 8%. That project will also get transferred to us?
Once this happens, yes, definitely. Yes, it is there.
Part of the platform.
It is part of the platform. So 4.7 then will become 4.9 plus gigawatt.
Okay. And so just a final question on the CAPEX. How much was done in 9 months? And what do you expect the CAPEX to be in FY26?
So, Nikhil, for the first 9 months, the total CAPEX that has been spent is about 6,200 crores. And, you know, we are expecting to end the full year with close to 10,000 crores. If you recall, you know, earlier we had said we were expecting a 15,000 crore total CAPEX for the year. But, you know, of course, the current batch of projects that we are planning to complete are getting completed. And we had anticipated a higher amount of investment in the organic future project. But looking at the constraints that Sharad was earlier talking about, from, and some of you have also raised questions about which is a reality in the sector from connectivity, etc. point of view, what we have done instead, as you would have seen by our strategic actions in the quarter, is to press the pedal on the inorganic side. Right.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is to continue to deliver growth at a certain CAGR. So, because organic is kind of, seeming to be, a bit, challenging to scale up, considering everything, we have gone ahead and pressed the pedal on the inorganic route. And this also gives time for us, from a better planning, taking the long lead time actions well in advance to maintain the organic growth trajectory going forward. Yeah.
Understood. So, do we expect any kind of delays in renewable capacity additions for our 28 gigawatt of locked-in capacity because of the transmission constraint?
So it's the other way around, right? What we have actually publicly stated is we were aiming to be a 20 gigawatt generation company by 2030. We had shared this in 2023, May 2023, we had shared this to the market. Now you are seeing in front of you, there is already a just shy of a 30 gigawatt platform, and hopefully we should be able to deliver all of this well before 2030, right? So clearly there's an acceleration of growth, and there will have to be calibration, because, it is a block and tackle, project by project, location by location. We have actually not quantified anything, beyond 10 gigawatts on an annual basis. But if I were to just do a broad math, assuming that, at least by June quarter, if we are able to consummate both KSK and O2, plus our own, hitting the 10 gigawatt mark, we will be a 14 gigawatt operating platform by June 25, right, which is a few months from now. So, and then we'll take it from there, right? When we come back, with the annual fiscal year results, we would have gone through the business planning exercise for the next year, and we will be in a better position to give you an organic capacity accretion target for fiscal 26. Yeah?
Sure. Thank you, and all the very best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Saket Yadav from India Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi. So I have a couple of questions on KSK Mahanadi. We understand that there are lenders who still own 26% of the stake. So I just wanted to understand that the bid you have placed is for the 100% stake, or will that 26% still remain with the lenders?
No. 26% will stay with the lenders. But, there is a put option with the lenders, which will get active after 1 year. And within 1 to 5 years, they have a right to exercise that put. And obviously, no lender has a strategic intent to remain a minority equity investor in a non-core business, right? So their idea is to maximize their recovery and, recoup all the losses, etc., of the past, right? So there is a plan. The first step is to, get through the regulatory adjudication process of getting the asset in control, and then we will get into discussion with the lenders on, the balance 26% stake.
Right, understood. Thank you. And my next question is again on KSK Mahanadi. I wanted to understand that I read it somewhere that there are some 3,000 to 4,000 crores held with one of the units of KSK Mahanadi, and I wanted to know that will that be absorbed by the company or will it be distributed to the lenders?
No. See, the terms of the RFP when the IBC process commenced was that whatever was the cash accrued, receivables, EBITDA generation, etc., all of that belongs to the lender. So, any resolution applicant who put in their plans for consideration by the COC took that into consideration, right? That you are only bothered as an applicant with how much of money you are offering to both, the financial creditors and the operational creditors. There was a specific scoring mechanism, and hence, as an objective, as a winning strategy, your idea is to maximize the score and work with that. So whenever the plan gets adjudicated, till then, or whenever the plan gets, implemented or consummated, till then, whatever accrues goes to the lenders. So there should be no surprise on that front, yeah?
Understood. Thank you. Congratulations on the acquisition and all the best.
Thank you. The next question. Before we take the next question, requesting participants to restrict your questions to 2 per participant. If you have any other follow-up questions, you may rejoin the queue. The next question comes from Swati Jhunjhunwala from JM Financial PMS. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my question. So first question is on the green hydrogen. So we expected to commission it soon. Any idea you can give on the revenue and EBITDA that we can generate from this?
No, Swati, not at this stage, please. Yeah, we'll complete it. And, as we have said at the stage of announcing this, pilot project, is this that the modality that has been worked on is that we will get a 15% equity IRR on this project, which is to be amortized completely over a period of 7 years. So that's how the economics is going to work. So once the project gets completed, the project cost is frozen. Basis that on a normative debt equity and underlying equity IRR, and that is how the tariff is going to be worked out. But I mean, when you look at our total balance sheet, even if that number materially changes, I'm sorry to say that's going to be a rounding error, right? It's a very small project, so it is not going to materially move the needle either way. Yeah.
Got it. Second is on the commissioning. So right now we have close to 8.1 gigawatts and another 7.8 under construction. Now, if by June we are commissioning another 1.8, making it 10 gigawatts, plus the 4 of the acquisition. The balance 6 under construction, if you could give even a broad split between FY26 and 27, that would be great.
I just said a few minutes ago in response to another question that when we come back in the month of May with the annual results, having gone through an annual business planning exercise, we will be able to give a FY26 capacity addition guidance, and then the balance will be basic arithmetic for you.
Understood. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Samarth Khandelwal from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Hello, am I audible?
Yes.
Yes, sir. Firstly, congratulations on the CSK Mahanadi acquisition. Secondly, so my question is on the battery energy storage system side. If I am supposed to, how do I read a 250 megawatt by 500 megawatt hour battery project in terms of how much time would it take to for a solar project to charge that amount of battery? How much time would we be able to supply? How much of it would we be able to supply to the customer? What would be the battery life? How much would be the capex per megawatt hour basis? If you could help me with that. Thank you.
See, we have to understand that if we are talking of 250 megawatt of battery energy storage capacity with 2 hour discharge means 250 into 2, which is 500 megawatt hour. When we convert it into energy and assuming that we are charging it with solar, it's a solar plus, suppose solar plus or any kind of input energy, we have to assume that whatever the 500 megawatt hour discharge is there, maybe there is a efficiency loss when the input energy and the output energy, depending on the battery design, how you design, how efficiently, maybe 15%, 18%, 20%, whatever incremental energy for charging which is required. So out of 100, this is the maybe 120 is the input, or 115, maybe the output will be 100. That is the ballpark which is there. In terms of battery life, battery life is something that there is, the as per the PPA term, the project is designed in such a way that the minimum availability of the battery is there always. So normally, some kind of, you can use the word repowering of the battery, maybe once in 4 to 5 years, it is part of the capex, depending on the requirement, is done to maintain the output. But the benchmark is that after a 12-year, mostly most of the storage bids which have come for 12 years, after 12 years, the battery life of at least 70% is available, even if we are not doing the repowering. And you are allowing the normal battery decay, then also after 12 years, the 70% of the battery life is still there in terms of energy terms. So this is what I say. Capex number, as I told you, depends on lot of factors. Straight away giving a capex number is a challenge. It's because there are lot many factors which are variable in terms of whether related to connectivity, land and everything. So, but this is the next this thing you can say that 70% of the battery life is there after 12 years.
Also, we would be using a lithium type of or sodium type of battery, secondly, we would be charging the customer based on the number of units supplied or how much the solar generates to charge that amount of battery?
See, again, it depends on the big design. Mostly, if it is a storage project alone, it is not a unit, it is a rental model, lease model. That per megawatt per month, if it is 250 megawatt for 2 hours, then the bid normally asks for that if it is 250 megawatt capacity, so per megawatt per month is the rental which is there, which is assured. Only thing is that the plant availability is to be ensured as per the terms. If it is a battery, there are some cases in which it is in energy terms also some bids are there, wherein combined with solar and evening discharge of 2 hours of the battery, and the number of units of what minimum is required during evening, then it is a per unit bid also which are there. So it is depending on the bid terms, which is it is either rental model, but majority are rental model.
And Samar, to answer your other part of your question, so far we are not aware of sodium batteries being used for commercial large scale operations. So I mean, our limited understanding is that it's only lithium ion batteries.
Yeah.
Operator, can we make that the last question, please? We have to, or maybe we can take one more question, yeah? Because Sharad and I have to rush into something else, yeah?
Sure. Thank you.
Let's take one last question, please.
Sure. We'll take one last question from the line of Ritwik Sheth from OneUp. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Good evening, sir. Sir, actually, my question is a clarification. Earlier you mentioned in the call the O2 acquisition, the 2.4 gigawatt which is under development will require a capex of 13,000 crores. Did I hear it right?
Yes, so, you're right, Patrick, and you don't have to rely on hearing or our speaking skills. My request is if you can go to our website or look at the stock exchange filings, there is a presentation that was made at the time of O2 acquisition in the last week of December. And there are two tables on one particular slide where you will get all the numbers linked to that. Yeah, there's a 13 to 14,000 crore expected capex for the balance 2.4 gigawatt. Yeah,
got it. And just on the KSK acquisition, what would be the pending capex which will be required to do to operationalize the balance 1.8 gigawatt?
You see, as I said earlier also that we will be coming out with the numbers when the process gets completed, but while doing the due diligence, as I said earlier in my opening remarks also, that the total plant capacity once fully operational is 3.6 gigawatts and 50% is operational. But balance of the plant, most of the balance of the plant is ready for entire 3,600 megawatts, whether it is the transmission evacuation line or whether it is the water pipeline, and even there are three more units which have to come. One of the units, more than 40% of the work is complete. Balance other two units also part work is complete. So it will be at a significantly lower cost per megawatt capex at which the plant will be fully operational than the benchmark greenfield cost for 1.8 gigawatt. So this is what I will just say, giving the exact number, maybe at the right time you will come back.
Okay, sure. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, I now hand the conference over to the management for closing comments.
Thank you everyone. I think it has a thanks for being with us during this quarter three. And as I have said in my opening remarks, we see the things to be better in the coming year with what we see, expect, and we are reading that maybe more of government spend and also the private investment likely to increase now, which will definitely have a positive impact on the power sector also. Thank you very much for being with us.
And in case there are any follow-ups, please feel free to get in touch with our IR team. Thank you very much.
Thank you. On behalf of Antique Stock Broking, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.